Welcome to Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing issues that divide us in order to find solutions that will unite us. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the 21st in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining issues that divide us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas. I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive, through questions posed to the participants, an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of the causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful accommodation of each side towards the other. Today, we are talking about the political, cultural, legal ramifications of sexual orientation, and my panelists are Lisa Boyles, back with us again, along with Pat Chesbrough, who's pretty regularly on our program, and for the first time, Sarah Welton. So the first question, it wasn't so long ago that sodomy, which is another name for homosexuality, was illegal. Alan Turing, the inventor of the machine which broke the Nazi Enigma code during World War II, was prosecuted for that very crime, homosexuality, after the war. We had the Defense of Marriage Act and Don't Ask, Don't Tell during the Clinton presidency, and even Obama's position on gays had to evolve before he came all in supporting LGBTQ rights. That was a big change over a short time. What brought it about, that change that occurred in a span of, I don't know how many years, 10 years or so, where it was very difficult to be openly gay or homosexual, and now it doesn't seem like people are afraid as much? What happened?
Well, I'm going to laugh, but I think shows like Will and Grace, I think we all of everyone could probably knew someone who was gay, probably, or had encountered someone, and it just became a little bit more mainstream. And so you started seeing more television shows, or side characters in movies. I remember Goldie Hawn, one of her films years ago, Protocol. And she lived with two gay hairdressers. And, you know, granted they were stereotyped, you know, but it was, it's always existed, but it just all of a sudden became more mainstream in a very populist kind of way, you know, movies, TV, you know, things that applied.
When we grew up, we had our standard comedy thing, I guess. Well, you know, he's so sophisticated. You know, we mocked gays all the time. But that doesn't seem to be that funny anymore.
Well, I think part of it, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier together, is this whole idea of young people knowing people, younger people have come out more people have come out, people, they're just part of their friend, I mean, why not, kind of thing. I think that's part of it, too. And I agree with Lisa. I think just the idea that we have funny shows that treat people like they're people and we move on, and I think that's good, but I do think a lot of it has to do with the young people saying, you know, really? Why is this a big deal?
Kind of like when we were young and the Vietnam War was going on. We were thinking, huh? You know, what?
Go ahead, Sarah.
I was going to say that there's more information. The fact that there's actually gay history out there, and you can find books that talk about gay history. You can find books that talk about the secret organizations and things like this. That's intriguing for people to look at how people had to live at one time. The fact, when I was teaching lifespan development, I would tell people, you know, there was a time when women could be arrested if they were wearing men's clothing. They had to have three pieces of clothing that were feminine. And in order to do that, police officers stripped women to check it out. And that kind of thing, when Hollywood women started to wear pants, it changed. It became more fashionable for women to do that. I remember not being allowed out of my house if I was in pants. You could play in the backyard, but you did not go into town if you weren't in pants. And that was not that long ago.
Lisa, you were about to say something.
Well, going back to Pat, but that's very intriguing what you were saying. Going back to what Pat said about how young people, you know, coming out more, and that also, like, the blindness. So if we have a lot of friends that were openly gay, the children don't see that difference. They don't start talking about why and what, you know what I mean? You might not have those conversations, per se, in the forefront. I think about that. There was a picture of two boys. One was black and one was white. And the little white boy got his head shaved like his black friend so the teacher wouldn't be able to tell them apart. And it was, again, he didn't get color. There wasn't, because it's just the way it is. And it, yeah, so you're right. I think that's a part of it. That just came to my mind when you were talking about that.
How much effect has the courts played in this development?
I think they're more polarized.
Kicking and screaming, I think. I think there's been a lot of... been a lot of resistance from the court. I think a lot of these things have been brought to the fore because of the courts. And I think that some of the decisions have been... I think there have been some really earth-shattering decisions. And I think there have been some
which,
that are a little disappointing. I think both directions. I mean, I think... To say that I'm baking a cake, but I'm not going to bake it for you because you're getting married to it's a gay marriage. I don't believe in that, you know, religiously. I'm not going to make you a cake. That's a different kind of a thing than having rules that say you've got to treat people.
We're going to talk about that later on in more detail, that particular event.
Yeah, you've got to treat people well.
But you're saying that the courts have been on both sides, or
I believe they've been on both sides.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What do you think, Lisa?
I think so. Yeah, I agree with Pat. I think so, and I think that sometimes issues that are kind of dormant, and when the courts get involved, then you see the polarization that occurs, and all of a sudden, people who didn't have a view on something will have a view, albeit positive, whatever side you're on. You know, we saw that just with birth control when we wanted just insurance companies to cover it that people were paying for, and all of a sudden that became a big issue where places like Notre Dame University that covered birth control all of a sudden didn't like the fact they were going to be mandated to cover it. And so you see, yeah.
So the whole religious thing, we will definitely talk about that. Sarah, what do you think about the courts?
The court system, we say that we're supposed to take care of everybody and be fair. But what is fairness? It's the people who have power and the people who have the voice. And we were talking prior to the show today as a little bit about the power and the voice. I grew up in a time where the people didn't look at the courts so much as what the community was doing. And we didn't fear the courts in that way. We just felt that we would be upheld and that kind of thing. Then we started to realize that there were people out there that were just angry and upset about things that didn't affect them directly, and we couldn't figure that out.
Do I get a sense that everybody in this room now has a fear of the court?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
So disappointing that we're not trying to seek the candidates that are the most balanced, but the most biased. And you know, why do we even have a Supreme Court, for example, if we're going to just stack it with people that agree with somebody else? I mean, I don't know.
Does this Trump presidency represent a setback for LGBTQ rights? Setback for these rights?
Okay, now, possibly legally, yes. Okay, that's, and it possibly is big on how things go, you know. But I think you also see the other side is they're fighting. We're fighting. People that believe in those rights, we're seeing a big uprising among the youth.
So you're saying that the attempt to set back these rights is energizing the opposition?
Exactly, yeah.
Pat?
I think everybody's rights are, I think most people's rights are in jeopardy with this Republican administration. I believe that the whole idea is to protect a certain few of elite people and make sure they get lots and lots and lots and lots of money, and the rest of us, well, too bad. Not that I'm cynical.
I have to agree that in one aspect, I'm very cynical that our rights are going away. But I also do believe that we've opened up people's eyes to real people. We are seeing real people who are hurt, who are unable to get the jobs they want or to get the housing they want or to be treated fairly, even baking the cake, that's such an absurd thing. That the fear of some people because somebody's different is ruling things rather than looking at it and going, how does this affect me? It doesn't affect me. It's the way things are. And we need to, you know, as I think about the open and the closed mindset, we need to start teaching more of the open mindset ideas of life because the closed mindset keeps us in fear.
This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. Today we are talking about sexual orientation, legal, political, cultural ramifications. And we have Lisa Boyles, Pat Chesbrough, and Sarah Welton with us today. Any thoughts on the effect that this particular nominee, which just came out yesterday, would be Mr. Brett Kavanaugh, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, to be Justice Brett Kavanaugh, the effect that his nomination will have on LGBTQ rights? Nobody knows yet? Not enough information on this guy?
No, I think, honestly, from what I've read, and I've tried to read as many sources as I can with the
It's only less than 24 hours.
Yeah,
so
and really you're limited.
Yeah, right.
I think the big focus with him right now probably is the Mueller investigation and his belief in the president almost being untouchable, except when he doesn't like him, when he works for Kenneth Starr. But for the most part, you know, keeping the presidential, like, broadening his power.
You mean the Republican president. Let's keep him protected.
But if you're
a Democratic, you know, you can just go ahead and have a little sexual dalliance and you're being impeached, which
is
basically what happened with Clinton.
Yeah. That's right.
So my take on it, he says that he will look at the law, but the law, as I have noticed his rulings in the past, is skewed. And so there's, you know, it's that if we have somebody who truly does look at the Constitution, who truly does look at the Bill of Rights, who truly does look at the precedents that were sent.
I like to look at the 14th Amendment. I think the 14th Amendment is something that we need to.
Well, and just the rights to privacy, things like this, that all goes there. And if he truly does look at those things, it would be fine. But I have the feeling that it's skewed.
How about our Alaskan senators? Any thoughts on how they're going to go as far as this confirmation vote? I think we're all pretty clear on what Dan Sullivan's.
I think so.
Yeah. What about?
And Lisa did vote for him for the circuit court.
Did she?
Yes,
yeah.
She did vote for him there. So. But she's already starting to get pressure. Those commercials already started last night.
I was just listening to the fact that there's going to be millions of dollars spent on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it directed, get ready, a lot to Alaska and Maine.
Yeah.
Because they're feeling that those are the key places. And we're going back to how much money does it take to affect a senator. But I believe that she might... I don't have confidence that she can withstand the Republican pressure to do what they want her to do. Because I think she likes to keep her job, and I think she doesn't think she would keep it if she bucked the system.
Hmm.
Again.
My interpretation of the history of our federal system is that individual rights were championed by the federal government. We have the First 10 Amendments, the Bill of Rights, which basically we're talking about individual rights, were championed by the federal government, which overruled attempts by state governments to restrict individual rights. We can look at the Civil War. the states definitely wanted to restrict the individual rights of a certain color, of a certain race. The 13th, 14th Amendments, the end of Jim Crow, basically was the federal government stepping in and exerting individual rights. Voting rights, marriage equality, gender equality, all represent the feds in some fashion protecting the individuals from majorities in certain states who tried to legislatively discriminate against those individuals. I see your heads nodding. Is my view reasonable interpretation of history?
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't think it's been – I don't think everything has been dealt with. I've been reading up a little bit around the whole transgender issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of issues that surround transgender people that are not necessarily the same issues that surround gay and lesbian people. And one of them is your identification. Like, and different states have different rules about mm-hmm. what you have, what kind of identification you have. My daughter was actually, her fiance is a transgender person. And I asked, well, why aren't you guys going to get married? And he said, well, my birth certificate still says that I'm a female. And so all states have not gone with being able to change it so that you actually would be in your identification would be to the gender, you know, that you are now. And so I think that there's a lot of those issues, but those are issues that are that happen in the states. And some states have dealt with them in a way that would be respectful, and others have not.
So if we follow the historical pattern, eventually it is hoped then the feds would step in
yes.
to settle that issue,
yes.
that particular issue that you
yeah.
Yeah.
It's complicated. Is the
Trump presidency following the trend or working against it, that the states are more discriminatory and the feds are more promoting individual rights?
Oh, I think there are states that are going to rebel against the Republican administration for what they're trying to take away from individuals' rights. I think there's going to be a struggle that way.
So kind of like reversing the
yes.
positions. The
yeah.
We're seeing it in environmental issues alone. You know, I mean, when things started happening and everything was being pushed through by the EPA, well, X now, we did see a lot of states saying, wait, we've worked really hard to get these rules in place. We're not going backwards. And fortunately, I think that's very consumer-led. You know, money talks, and so it's going to be interesting in some of these issues, because it is, you know, the establishment right now in Washington is to make money, and so you have things like mm-hmm. you know, so a lot of these issues can be really dealt with by the consumer in some respects, and what's like I said, environmentally, you are seeing a lot of pushback with states
in favor of individual rights.
Essentially, yeah.
That's going to reversal of the rules
yep,
then somewhat.
Yep.
Yeah. You have anything to add to that?
No, I've seen the same thing. I've watched some of the states choose that they will not go along with what the federal establishment's doing.
The discriminatory aspects
yes.
of their – okay. One of the questions I'm planning to ask at the next panel discussion on racism relates to the concept of the other, people not like us.
Mm-hmm.
Blacks were not like whites, obviously, because of the skin color. Mm-hmm. Jews were different from the racially pure Aryans in Nazi Germany. Homo and transsexuals are not the same as strict heterosexuals. Is the disdain felt by some heterosexuals against gender orientation other than their own based on their belief of their own superiority, or is fear of the other's legitimacy the reason behind their condescension?
There's two aspects. In my study on moral identity, I went through the research on identity formation, and we have three aspects of identity, and one is your role, you know, who you are as related to mom, daughter, you know, spouse, teacher, that kind of thing. Then there's the idea of what group you belong to. And within that, the group that you belong to, you might be in the middle of that group, or you might be on the edges and be marginalized, but part of that group. And then there's always the out group, the group that you don't belong to. And this is all part of the idea of, survival, is that you have to belong to a group and you have to make the other something to be afraid of or something to hate, something to dislike. And then there's the other aspect of identity, which just has to do with how you do things. If you are creative, you are happy, you are sad, those kinds of identity things. But the big one that you're talking about is the in-group and the out-group. But your identity is a basis. If you view yourself as a moral person, where did that morality come from? Is that related to the group you belong to, or is it related to the number of people that you know in so many different groups? And they have found, one of the studies that was done, is the more people you know in different groups, the more empathy you have, the more you are able to get along with people, the less fear you have, and the happier you are.
So diversity makes for a better society
is the
conclusion that I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Well, Pat, fear or superiority? What do you think?
Well, this is interesting because I found this article, and this guy's doing some research on examine how emotions spurred by LGBT issues and people affect policy support. And he said that one of the things that happened, the biggest emotion is disgust. He said this whole idea of, I learned that, in fact, a basic story about LGBT politics makes some people feel disgusted. And when they feel disgusted, they're much less likely to support these policies. Well, I haven't read it. I haven't read all of his studies, but I think it's fascinating to think that word would be used. It's not fear, but disgust is a pretty powerful emotion.
Well, so that's the third item there. We had fear, superiority, condescension, and disgust. Where do you weigh in, Lisa?
Well, it's kind of general, and again, it kind of goes back to the past, but a medical professional I was seeing, she does what she has to do. Don't get me wrong, she doesn't make, choices, but I happen to see her after Trump got elected. And I know she's very religious and in a very traditional, conservative way. And I was very emotional, and I didn't realize that. And I kind of said, yeah, a lot of things going on in the election. And she goes, well, it's just now people will know what's been shoved at us. And it was that very much like what Sarah said.
Disgust.
And but then the disgust and what, was a combination of the two. It was our group is against that stuff. And we've just been shoved down our throats, that disgusting, and it was just it really was powerful for me. And I'm talking about it now. And that was almost 2 years ago where I remember thinking, how can I understand her? Because I just didn't get it. Because everyone says, well, try to think if you're on the other side. And again, I think I've lived in a diverse society that enough my little society where I can't understand that. But in a sense, yeah, disgust and being shoved down, these and I know it was gay marriage. That was the biggest thing that was bothering her.
So if we're going to be bridging the gap, we need to analyze ways of overcoming disgust.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. Something's brought out here on this particular show. This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. Today we're talking about sexual orientation with Lisa Boyles, Pat Chesbro, and Sarah Welton. Recently, there was a court case, we talked about this a little earlier, where a baker was sued by a gay couple because he refused, on religious grounds, to bake their wedding cake. And I'm not really sure who won the suit. I know there was a 5-4 ruling that came down in favor of the baker. And that is because all the opinions that were written were all over the place. Mm-hmm. Some claiming bias against the baker by a state official. Yeah. Then that was the reason why they had to go for the baker. Others claiming that he's allowed to hold his religious views, but he's not allowed to discriminate, whatever that means. But all the confusion begs the obvious question. And that is the notion of religious freedom just another excuse to practice bigotry and intolerance?
Yes.
So I got a yeah from you.
Well, it certainly was true with the Puritans, wasn't it?
Well,
I'm really interested in hearing what Sarah has to say about this, because we discussed what her her church group. And go ahead, Sarah.
Said my church is very liberal. And we have the basis of freedom, and it's the freedom of religion, freedom from religion is a big part of it. And the idea that you have your liberty of conscience, you can't make somebody else believe something. They have to come to it themselves. And for you to have dogma or creeds or any of that is not okay. In my church, though, it caused a split. We were thrown out of the American Baptist Churches of Alaska because we did not follow what the other Baptist churches wanted.
And that was a conservative agenda?
The American Baptist churches can be any. They're from liberal to conservative. We were thrown out because homosexuality was against biblical teaching, according to that what they had to say. And we could not uphold that. That was not, because of the freedoms, first off, the church is autonomous, is not to be under the jurisdiction of any other church. We freely go to be with other churches so that we can provide education and missions and things like this. We freely go there, but the church itself cannot tell you what to think or what to do. And that was totally against it.
Churches do that all the time, though.
Yeah, but that's not one of the Baptist freedoms. So, I said, no, I'm not trying to proselytize anybody here or anything like that, but I just wanted to say that the church organization went against its own beliefs in kicking us out. And we figured that, okay, we're going to have to be on our own. We did end up finding other churches who were like us, but they're not in Alaska. So we have joined with others.
The same thing. I was a member of the Episcopal Church out here. Mm-hmm. And when I joined, we had a very moderate, progressively leaning pastor, or priest, whatever you want to call, depending on, he's kind of like a Catholic light. And he was replaced by someone who, at this time, that's when Africa, the Church of England in Africa, was starting that real big splits over homosexuality and the ordination of a bishop in, I think it was Vermont or New Hampshire.
The gay bishop.
A female, too, I think. It was a male, and then there was a there was a female issue. And he was supporting the African and kept bringing it up. And I remember just getting so frustrated because, first of all, it wasn't an issue in our church. It wasn't an issue in our community at the time. And I ended up leaving the Episcopal Church. I am now Unitarian because I could not believe these great people that I thought to hear what was coming out. It was very saddening. And I grew up Episcopal. We talk. Yeah, it's not, I'm not down the, I don't walk the straight and narrow with that all the time, but you know what I mean? It was very saddening to see an issue that had nothing to do with our community church, our group of people. And if it did, people were afraid to speak out. All of a sudden, this church was causing sides. I mean, this church has been around since 1600s, 1500s, and now, there's a huge rift. And, Sarah, I understand. Yeah.
Is it an excuse, religious freedom, the notion of religious freedom, for bigotry and intolerance, Pat?
Well, I think it's contradictory. I mean, I think religious freedom is good. I think you should have freedom to practice your religion.
But the notion understood the interpretation.
Yes.
That's what it means. That's what, to me, and that's what I think it meant when we started out. It's the opportunity to practice your religion without somebody else interfering. But the people that came here for religious freedom, the Puritans, they drove my Quaker people out. They were nasty people and remained nasty people, and it was only about them. And so So I think we have to remember, if we are going to advocate for freedom, that we're not just advocating for freedom for me, but for freedom for everyone.
Well, there's a religious freedom. Or, I mean, there is probably a religious concept by some Latter-day Saints back in the old days, Brigham Young days, where they had, you know, multiple people involved in marrying. Polygamy is the word for it. And it ended up being, you know, pretty abusive to the 12-year-old that had to marry the 50-year-old man. Yeah. And, you know, there seemed to be a line drawn there eventually that they didn't have the religious freedom to rape these young girls and just and call it a marriage. So where is that line going to be drawn, or do we have the capability of drawing that line with religious freedom?
Part of what I see and what I feel, and this is my perspective, so I can't guarantee, you know, that I'm correct here, but there seems to be a mythology about what religion is and plays a part in the United States. And a lot of it goes back to the Cold War, goes back to McCarthyism, goes back to communism. We can go back to the Puritanism too. Yep. But after World War II, there was another push for things. But we could go to the Great Awakening. We could go to, you know, the revivals and things like this that said, you know, the end of the world is coming, and we have to do things to either make it happen faster or to show how pure we are. And I feel that that's kind of where we are again, is that some people are just saying, we've got, you know, the world is a mess, and that's good because Jesus will come back then. And that, I mean, I'm serious.
You're
I'm
all
serious.
Raptured now.
And that's part of what I hear, and I'm just, you know, that scares me with that understanding. But I have actually heard people pray for the end of the world to happen.
And I think you hit the nail on the head too when you talked about what, you know, being told what, you know, you're free to practice, but is it your mission to constantly, you know, preach in a sense? So I think about that young woman who had miscarried, but that needed that pill, and it was at a Walgreens in the lower 48, and the pharmacist had it. It was filled, but refused to give it to her, basing it on his religious belief. Now, this woman explained there's no heartbeat. So, what was he trying to convert her? I look at it as, well, would you just work in a religious pharmacy that doesn't do that? Or, you know, can you, is there ulterior motive in what you're doing? And I kind of see that. I really believe to have it in his hand, but say, I'm not giving this to you, because I'm going to preach to you why I'm not giving this to you. Mm-hmm. He could have handed it off to anyone else, another pharmacist. Mm-hmm. He could have, but he made that choice to let her know. So those bakers made it a point to say, "You, I'm not giving it because you are doing this particular thing I don't believe in." So it's interesting. I think what you said a lot there. Mm-hmm. Are we using this as a point of preachiness and conversion? Or just, I just don't, then, you know, don't, you know, word will get out very quickly in the wedding community that you don't make cakes for gays without having to be offensive about it. You know what I mean? If that's, you know what I'm saying? If that's, yeah. And, I think there's more of an ulterior motive there. So
we have a secular nation, and we have the secular nation, which is allowing all kinds of religious freedoms. It says we will not be affiliated, the Constitution says, with any particular religion. But religion really seems to be creeping in. Yes. more as an opportunity for bigotry than anything else.
Exactly.
You're a Unitarian church. My son, who's never really religious at all, whenever Trump got elected, he joined a Unitarian church too. And, you know, for the very same reason, I think, just to you know, be with people that want to try to do something.
Yes.
And become part of a community, I guess, more than anything else. Mm-hmm. So is the secular aspect of it losing ground to the religious, and I hate to use this term, but I'm going to say it anyway, religious bigotry in this country, or is that something that is can be fought off?
It needs to be fought off. I think I do think we're slipping that way, partly because of the people that have come to power, and the reasons they've come to power, that the whole Tea Party and the, I mean, a lot of that is based on this really conservative social agenda. It isn't a fiscal agenda that they have. It's a social agenda, and their social agenda is quite clear. We know what it is, and their excuse for that reason, excuse for that
justification
is that the Bible says it, and my minister says it, and because they say it, you know, because those people say it, then I need to do it because otherwise I'll go to hell.
In 2016, the Obama administration announced that a ban on openly transgendered people serving in the military was lifted. He lifted the ban in 2016. This March, the Trump administration tried to reimpose the ban, but the issue is currently tied up in the courts. Given the current makeup, we're back to the Supreme Court. Of the Supreme Court, do you think Trump's ban on openly transgendered people serving in the military will succeed? What do you think? Are you hopeful?
I didn't for the longest time when he started appointing more military people in his cabinet because there was the old school, that was one thing that they seemed to be more in favor of, the ban, you know, because these are hardworking, you know, people that have, you know, just, you know, I mean, most of these are career military people. Very few people join to have the operation. I can't, you know, and but it's just, but as they start leaving and he starts rallying more, I really think that we may see that go backwards. I really do.
That the ban will succeed?
The ban, yeah, I really do because he's been getting out and almost campaigning again to help, quote unquote, other, you know, with the midterms coming up. And he really focuses on the person he's campaigning for. It tends to be his rallying cries. But I think the more he gets, he's with his base, the less, you know, he's influenced by that base. So I'm hoping not, but I it doesn't look good because we've been quietly getting rid of immigrants out of the air army that were promised citizenship and joining, and very intelligent, useful members of our military.
Good soldiers
with
loyal
degrees.
People.
Yep. And
patriotic.
Yep.
Being deported.
So that's a different whole situation, but if you're allowing
that. We're
going to
talk about that a little bit today,
yeah,
too.
But, so just saying, I see it kind of going quietly and then back to the ban, yeah.
Yeah, so you think the ban's going to succeed. Sarah, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm fearful that the ban will succeed, and I don't like to be afraid. I like to think that people will wake up and say, you know, wait a second. These are people who are still youthful, who have, you know, the drive to want to be a part of the military. I'm a pacifist by heart, but I know that the military does humanitarian efforts too. But you know, maybe that's going to go away in the future too.
It also
I don't
gives
know.
People opportunity to succeed in life
right.
in other ways. A lot
right.
of my students were military. Pat.
Yeah.
I think his whole strategy is othering people. I mean, I think he's the more people he can other, the stronger it appears that he is. And this is an obvious, you know, going back to the disgust thing, it's an obvious thing that he can point out and say, those people are, you know, and people say, yeah, those people, we don't want those people, you know, because he can other them. Many people don't know anyone who's transgender. So he's, you know, he can pick. Many people don't know any of those soldiers who are immigrants who were promised citizenship. So he's picking on people. You know, I think of that. You know, they came for the Jews, and I didn't say anything. I keep thinking of that mm-hmm. because that's kind of what's happening. He's mm-hmm. picking on people that he can bully, and people will agree with him because you know they. I don't like those. people. I like those people. I don't like those people. And pretty soon it's going to be your people, my friend, the people with, you know, dogs, I guess. I don't know.
I just feel that it's also dumbing down America by not not going in. I mean, the diversity, what we talked about earlier, is the knowledge base is shrinking to where people aren't paying attention to much at all. You know, if somebody said it once, then that's the gospel now, and we don't bother to look things up. We don't bother to check things. And when we do check them, it's only by one source because it's quick to find it on our phone or whatever, rather than look around for more things. And I see that we're just being pushed into this kind of thinking, and it's real easy to mob hysteria, to get yourself all worked up over stuff that really doesn't even affect you sometimes.
And lots of times there are lies, just flat lies. Yeah. Okay, in April of this year, a referendum was held in Anchorage on the proposition that transgendered people would only be permitted to use public bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with the gender of their birth. The proposition fell by 6 percentage points. But if it had passed, like the bathroom bill in North Carolina, how could it be enforced? Are we going to have to hire enough police to stand at every public restroom checking birth certificates? It is amazing to me that such a thing would be considered. I see a man and his little girl daughter, 3-year-old daughter, going into the men's room at McDonald's because he can't go into the ladies' room, and so the girl goes into the men's room. And what does she do in there? She goes to the bathroom, you know, and then she comes out after she washes her hands. Same thing with women taking little boys into the women. What is the deal with the bathrooms? I can't figure it out.
At home, we usually don't separate, do we? You know, do you have your men's bathroom and your women's bathroom at home?
Well, actually, my wife and I have separate bathrooms, and I think that's one of the reasons why we've had such a successful marriage. At least that's what Michael Caine says.
I think that has more to do with the way you keep the bathroom.
Yeah, right.
My grandparents had the separate bathrooms, too.
Worked out pretty well, didn't it?
But I just think, you know, part of it is that it's fear again. And let's make sure that we can make life so uncomfortable for people that they'll choose not to be transgender, which, of course, is, you know,
Think about it.
They'll choose not to be transgender. I mean, and there is no choice here, folks. The choice is to portray or act in the way that you feel inside. And that's the choice. It's not the choice to be transgender. And, you know, the whole idea of that, it just, you know, said, I have a gay brother. I know. And I knew that there was something different about him from the time he was 4 years old. You know, and it's just, it's amazing that people do not understand sexual orientation, and to be transgender is even more of a process and difficult, and the coming out is so hard. It's so hard.
And I totally agree with you, Sarah. And what got me is not even looking at the statistics of they brought up locker rooms a lot. That was another big thing. And I just thought about, and no offense to the men in the room, but if you look at it more of this occurs. It is with heterosexual men as far as pedophilia goes, like, because that could be pushing the pedophilia. And I'm thinking, where are you? And it was fear. Again, as you said, and both of you said, let's go back to fear mongering. Let's go, you know, create the other with that.
Well, and then the whole issue, you know, of course, as this website talks about, suicidality is one of the most serious elevated health risks facing transgender people. While the causes of suicide are complex, growing evidence links high rates of among transgender youth and adults in part to stigma and discrimination. I mean, people don't understand, and I can get why people don't understand. Because if it's not you, you really don't. But you can try to understand that person is wired differently. And so?
Yes, when we had, which I'm very proud to say, our Palmer colony days, we had a, I was part of a group, a pride group that marched, and we had a very wonderful reception, very proud of Palmer. People that didn't agree just didn't smile or encourage us, but with a lot of much more encouragement than not.
Talkeena had a march too.
Yep, so they did. I went to the first one. I missed this year's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was marching with a family and a mother and father whose daughter was becoming a he, I guess, in the process of
transitioning.
Couldn't think of the word for a minute there. And it was interesting to talk to them because they were just your atypical middle class family and their only child. And the father was having the normal difficulties and the mother was having the normal, like, the misunderstanding, what did we do wrong, all that stuff. And it was just, I was so proud of them because the husband wasn't confident in putting on the rainbow shirt and marching, but he did, and support of his son.
Doesn't it really boil down to love?
That's exactly what it boils down to. Yes.
Respect
for people as individuals.
If we can respect your dignity as a human being, then it seems to me that it ought to work.
Yeah, and if you don't agree with it, and you know, like I said, if you're not sure because you don't understand, like I looked at the parents, imagine just being a parent to a parent saying, "Wow." You know, and look at the, you know what I mean, being able to see the love that's still there and the questions and who did you go to have these questions answered and, you know, are you guys in therapy to talk and work through this? And, you know, that it's just taking that extra step to see it's a huge process, like you said. Yep.
The church, a couple of Sundays ago, I wrote on the whiteboard we have there, I said, why should I have empathy? Because that was asked on the radio just before I got to church. So I wrote that out there. And so that we could have discussion about that. Why should I have empathy? Why should I not have empathy? It was unbelievable that somebody would say that. Why should I? Oh, my goodness. It hurts to think that there are people that would measure out their empathy and say, I have empathy for this group, but not for anybody else.
But those people are assuming that no one is there's no need ever that they will need empathy themselves.
Yeah.
I think it's really difficult for people to really predict the future and to the point where you know that, my gosh, my whatever is never going to happen. This is never going to happen for me. This is never going to happen to me. I'm never going to, you know. Nobody's
I think
ever
it's more of the hypocrisy.
Things.
I think they expect the empathy, but do not want to give the empathy.
Yeah,
that's true.
This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio, Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. Today we are talking with Sarah Welton, Pat Chesbro, Lisa Boyles about transgendered, gay, sexual orientation. I'm going to get off topic here for a minute, because this is something that's really bothered me. There have been a multitude of issues raised by the Trump presidency that legitimately raise concerns. We can go from the very beginning, the Muslim ban on the way. I'm personally most horrified by the effects of the zero-tolerance immigration policy that separates young children from their parents. In spite of the court rulings that there have been only a tiny number of reunions, what strikes me watching the videos of these reunions is the total lack of emotion from the kids. No happiness expressed whenever they're connected with their parent again. No tears, just blank faces. In the meantime, the news cycle is shifting away to the Putin summit, the cave in Thailand, the tariff war, Korean cheating, the Supreme Court, Michael Cohen. It's a long list. Should the media be keeping the pressure on getting these kids back with their parents, or are they letting Trump off the hook again?
We should all be keeping the pressure on. And the whole issue, I mean, I'm fascinated.
Are we failing to do that then?
I think we're failing to do that. I think, again, as you said, you have that whole litany of things that are happening. How many things can we each of us attend to at a time? And we've got these little kids going, one-year-olds going in front of immigration judges.
With no lawyer.
With no lawyer, because, you know, obviously they know a lot about immigration law. And I just, you know, I had not seen the videos that you've talked about that there's no emotion, but what kind of damage have we done to these children? And if we, and now they're doing DNA testing to make sure that we got to keep the kids safe, you know, what? Didn't you do something on the way when you took them away from these people to check? Didn't you do something? Did you each give them a bracelet that was the same with the same number on so you could return
them? Did you do that at Chuck E. Cheese?
I mean, really, yeah. For heaven's sake.
Write down a name or something.
Yeah. For heaven's sakes.
That's what I said. Like, you know, you go into to be mm-hmm. at the fair and you've got, you know, the special ride thing. You've got a bracelet on.
Oh, well, my, take my grandson to the, yeah, we, yeah. to the... The trampoline park, yeah. we have matching bracelets. But yeah. Chuck E. Cheese, they match it with the yeah. kit, and then you have to match up.
What? It wouldn't be that difficult to do.
I mean, you go to the hospital, and they, you know, before you even go in, there's the thing put on your arm so that you don't get lost.
And I think about that poor boy, that infamous picture of that little boy in the ambulance in Aleppo.
Yeah.
With just no expression, covered in soot yeah. and blood. And that's what you're saying. That was the ultimate, you know,
trauma.
Reaction to trauma. It's shut down. Just shut down.
Yeah.
And children of war see this. Now we are inflicting this
yes.
on these young children.
And they'll never get over it.
No.
You know, so I think about, you know, I'm in the grocery store and my son many years ago would, you know, all of a sudden he'd be lost. And the, you know, I mean, my panic was not as much as his panic. And I think about what that was like. I mean, just in the grocery store, and yes. it's maybe only 5 minutes separation. Yes. But think about being taken yes. away.
Yeah, it's
in a strange country. After you've come thousands of miles to get away from violence, to escape asylum.
And then you're ripped from your parent, yeah.
It's real. Jeez.
So what more can be done? I think we're all agreed that this is a very horrible circumstance that we as America is experiencing. What can we do?
It comes down to that fear again, a fear of the other. They're going to come take our jobs. They're going to, you know, do this thing. They don't count as much as our children do. You know, that's
just why we don't encourage breastfeeding.
See, there's so many issues that we could be talking about today that it seems more and more absurd that we are, you know,
ridiculous.
And I mean, that's just another, let's distract with the breastfeeding issue now and say that formula is better or
although
least,
they did Mitch McConnell his heckling, because that seems to be the thing that's happening, which I'm, part of me is a little happy with, but where are the babies? Where are the
yeah.
babies? They were, and that was only a couple days ago.
So. Yeah. Oh, so you saw that?
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell being heckled about the babies?
Babies, yeah.
yeah. yeah. Well, and today on my phone on my way here, they were just saying that the another date has passed and the children mm-hmm. have not been returned.
Right.
And so there is some notice of that, but it's still, you know, do we go home and we write every single day to our representatives, to our legislators?
Like a reality show.
Do we?
Yeah, because reality shows, if you notice, every there was a new drama.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm. So we're becoming borderline personality
yes,
disorder.
Because that's how he...
Crisis has
yeah.
to happen.
There have been a lot of crises that have occurred since Trump became president, but this has got to be the most critical.
Yes.
And I just wonder, you know, how we're going to, you know, you can talk about the Mueller investigation coming up
yeah.
with criminal activity, collusion with Russia, obstruction of justice. But in my mind, high crimes and misdemeanors is what we're supposed to impeach the president on. And
if kidnapping kids
from their parents is not mm-hmm. a high crime, I'm not sure what the definition of a high crime
kidnapping
is.
Kidnapping and child abuse. Because
yeah,
it
child,
is.
Definitely
and child
abuse,
neglect.
Yeah.
I mean, they said the one child that was returned hadn't been bathed and
had lice.
85 days
like,
and
really?
Lice
yeah.
uncovered. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I don't... I guess maybe we should all march on the streets every day. I don't know. Maybe if we get everybody in the country to march from 12 to 1 every day to say, let's become humans in the U.S. I don't know. It's just crazy.
Or organizing that would be be kind of tough.
It would be. But
well, you've seen it remaining. Yeah.
Okay, I got word we have about a minute and a half left, so let's wrap it up. With Lisa, any final comment on our gender orientation discussion?
Well, yes, I guess I have to say, again, along the lines of women having the right to vote, I did not realize it was illegal to be homosexual in Alaska until 1980. I really am, that's when it became legal, and that is a date I'm going to remind people about whenever anyone we talk about this.
Not that long ago.
I want to say that, especially to the young people, because they are very vocal now, and they're very open about their sexuality, much more than I've seen, and I'm only 54, you know, so I'm hoping to remind them, keep it going.
My gay son was born in 1978, so there were, for a couple of years, he would have been an illegal.
Yep.
Pat?
Well, I guess one of the things for me was, of course, being introduced to the whole, to the concept of transgender, actually, when my daughter was with this person. And the things that I read, the whole complicated that I explained, but all the other complications of making a huge decision, a courageous decision like the people make, and then have every, you know, all these barriers. I think we have to be, you know, we throw barriers in front of people all the time and then wonder why they get frustrated and angry and lash out. And that's why, because we are forever wanting to be better than everybody else, I guess.
My final comments is it was a good discussion today. We enjoyed hearing and learning about other people's ideas and things, and I think that that's part of what we have to do, is we have to continue that. My understanding of sexual orientation has evolved over time, as it has probably for everyone in this room, of understanding. So we will continue.
Well, thanks for coming on board here, ladies. Lisa Boyles, Pat Chesbrough, Sarah Welton, and to you out there in Radio Land, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Bridging the Gap. We welcome diversified perspectives. If you are interested in becoming a panelist for a future show, send us an email to manager@radiofreepalmer.org.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters.